This is Jewish Board Talk with Cherise Zifford, only on 101.9 High FM.
Did you know that in 1939, 2 weeks after the German invasion of Poland, Soviet authorities deported more than a million Poles, many of them Jewish children, to the Soviet Union? To cut a long story short, about 500 of them, including Jewish children, were brought to South Africa and relocated to Oudtshoorn. I learned this snippet of history from a newly released novel entitled The Fourth Boy by Andrew Robert Wilson. Andrew has been in the media and entertainment industry for 40 years and has also been a theatre critic for The Mail and Guardian and has worked in wildlife conservation and television. I'm delighted to have him as my guest now to talk about the book. Andrew, welcome and thanks so much for joining me.
Hi, thank you very much, Cherise, for asking.
Andrew, I kind of went into all the things that you have done because each one looks like quite a lot of fun, considering it is work. And I just wonder to what extent all these different things, theatre critic, entertainment and conservation, has led up to your writing this novel, or was this novel something you always wanted to do and now was the time?
No, look, this novel wasn't always something I wanted to do. In fact, I've never imagined that I could even write a novel because I'm a pretty avid reader of amazing authors for decades. And look, I think my interest in theatre and all that kind of thing started at school already. We did amazing plays. We had wonderful English teachers. We had our own drama society outside of school as well as inside. That led to university, and the drama part of my journalism degree was a huge part. And yes, you're right. It was a lot of fun moving from being an actor to writer to television director kind of thing in fun shows like So You Think You Can Dance and Come Dine With Me, and three of them a series director. And The Great South African Bake Off, that was fun. I even imagined I was a baker after I left that show, having worked with so many amazing chefs around as well. It was fun. It did lead up to this. Everything is sort of embedded in one, and I don't think one consciously reaches for stuff. Even when crafting a narrative, it somehow evolves and develops, and it's already there somewhere. One just has to access it. And this story I came upon not long after I moved to Karlitzdorp, and that was 13 years ago, but probably about 5 or 4 years ago, I revisited the museum and saw this incredible story again. And I just thought, surely someone can tell the story in a way that is, entertaining and perhaps tense and partly mystery. And that's how this novel came about.
So you went to the exhibition in Oudtshoorn, is that correct?
That's right, yes, at the J.P. Nell Museum in Oudtshoorn, and they have a lovely exhibition. In fact, they have a flourishing society of those very people, the survivors of those 500 children who were brought to Oudtshoorn from Siberia, from the war in Europe, and it's an incredible story. Some were actually taken, there was a batch of about 400 who went to New Zealand, some went to Kenya, smallish groups. I mean, 500 is not small, but it was an amazing feat for the Polish government in exile, the Smuts government here, to pull off something like that with the Soviets, Yeah.
Creating a historical fiction, is that very awkward? How much do you feel you have to honor the historic facts?
I think one has to honor the historic facts in its detail as well when one weaves a fictional story around it. So the people who know those facts take them as fact, and it's quite clearly stated that the story itself is fiction. But often I enjoy reading historical fiction because of that reason. And it's also, it's not that one would be writing a book about Shackleton where every single detail is so well documented and there. One tells the history as much as one needs to, in order to inform, the narrative of the story itself. And Yeah, I've read comments since writing the book about writing historical fiction, and there are a lot of authors who do say, don't tell too much detail and don't tell too little. But at least it needs to be correct in order to honor those people, in crafting this fictional narrative.
I imagine what makes it much more difficult is that communities like in Oaktown probably knew the individuals, and there may even be some of those individuals still alive. Did you try and speak to people about them?
I didn't actually, and it was quite a conscious decision. Oddly enough, just as an aside before I answer you fully, my publisher, Karina, is Polish, which I did not know when I sent her the manuscript the first time, and also is in contact still with that very society. She's on their newsletter as well, with these people who the society in Oatsorn. And I did not as a conscious thing, because one wonders, now I'm crafting this narrative and I have this story that I in my head, and now I'm going to speak to the actual people, and that is going to drive me down a completely different path, and I won't be able to stop going down that path because it is their path, or it is the path that I have now learned. And so I would find myself in that instance being torn, the push me, pull you creature that has heads on both sides running in, different directions. So that was a conscious decision not to do that. Although I must say, I would love to meet some of them, and there are some of them still alive, and some who became very prominent and active members of, South African society over the years.
Your main character discovers on the first page that he's both Jewish and his father was gay. For you to take on those kind of identities, what was that like?
The Jewish identity for me is everywhere. It's in the humor I watch in Seinfeld. It's in the way people speak in New York. It's imbued in us who are exposed to Western media, and I'm of course not myself Jewish. I was raised Catholic, and of course I have many Jewish friends and all that kind of thing, and hence when I do touch upon that kind of issue that I am no expert in, I would touch gently, and I would touch with consideration and respect in that way, as much as I needed to touch in order for the narrative to work,
The setting is in the Karoo, and when you consider like the Karoo is one of the least inhabited places in South Africa, the amount of literature that comes out either from there or is set there seems very disproportionate. Would you agree?
I would absolutely agree. It's a strange thing. And then one has to ask oneself, where does it come from? The environment? Does it come from so much time to think? Does it come from so much hard experience in, various? I think of an Afrikaans author and poet like Tertius, whose own daughter was struck by lightning. And he writes a poem about it, and it's these, it's the strangest things. I can't put my finger on it, whether it is the environment. You have Ethel Fugard, you had people like who was at Rhodes when we were there, Don McClelland, a sort of right-hand person of Ethel Fugard from those years. There was Guy Butler, there are just so many. And I guess it's an inspirational area where the mind goes and wanders and crafts and creates and thinks and contemplates. Maybe that's it. I couldn't say.
And also, it's also a place of kind of murder mystery. I'm just thinking of like the is it the Meltart murder mysteries, and your book, and your book obviously is also a murder mystery.
Yes.
Do you think it's really conducive to have murders in those small towns?
I absolutely think so. It's a strange way of looking at the world, but I mean, I speak out of turn, but there are many people who come to these regions, not necessarily where I live, Perhaps they're at the end of something. Perhaps they want a new beginning to something. And often the harshness of the surroundings and environment drives them to act upon whatever, you know, demon they might have or not have, you know. That's an interesting thing. And I think also the incongruity of a small, peaceful town and that idyllic look of the Karoo lends itself to being, you know, the arena of the opposite, which so many authors do use it as, I think.
Andrew, it's also a coming of age story. How did you merge kind of history, the setting, murder? How did it all come together?
It's been very difficult to answer that. Coming of age story, I did rely very here and there slightly on bits of autobiographical experience, but not a hell of a lot. I think when you write, especially maybe your debut novel, you're going to draw on as much as you can from what you've experienced or the people or a phrase that was spoken in an elevator or whatever it is from wherever it was. Could be from 40 years ago, could have been from yesterday. And all these things weave together, you know, and I think with the background that I had in film and drama and all that kind of thing, it all comes together in a kind of osmosis kind of way. You know, you can't actually say, oh, on that day I sat down and I thought of that amazing thought. And then it became that line of writing, you know, that's hard. I can't say.
What drove you? The story drove you of the Polish children. That was your driving factor. Did the characters just develop themselves after that?
Yes, they did. I mean, I had the modern day versions of the characters already in my head. I knew who they would be, and I knew who would have a history with who. So, without any spoilers, I recreated them as young teenagers, and it moved on from there. But it was never one dominating the other, or me thinking, okay, in the 1980s and this guy's now 58, you know, what was he like? It came also via osmosis. It kind of made sense as it happened to me as I was writing. And I'm not a disciplined writer, so I don't get up at 6 and finish at 12. You know, I can think for 2.5 weeks and not write a single word. And then I will sit down and what comes up would surprise me, even though I thought I had the story nicely thought out in my head. Something different happens when you attack the page. It's a strange thing.
It's like the story wrote itself. Andrew, the reviews have been phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. And I see people are already wondering, are you working on your second?
I am at the moment and at this very moment on this very day. I had been thinking, I had written it and I thought I had completed it. And I gave it to a friend and also to my publisher. And they gave back some incredible, valuable sort of feedback on it. And I went away and thought and then read between the lines of what they were saying. And then I realized what I need to do. So I'm busy rewriting large portions of it. But it deals with culture. It deals with identity. It deals with loss of power. And it deals with confusion, which we all have to deal with. And it's about two 82-year-old ladies who once in the late 70s worked on a large embroidery of Simon van der Stel in front of Groot Constantia with two beautiful ladies of the city and three slaves and some baskets of grapes. That was the embroidery. Now, that featured prominently since the Wool Board sponsored it and their province won. But on now to 40 years later, they discover it's in a storeroom somewhere gathering dust. They feel spat upon. They feel forgotten. They feel that they need to do so. Well, the one particularly cajoles the other into doing something about it. And they decide to pull a heist on Groot Constantia with the help of their grandson and a friend from rehab. And they go and they steal the embroidery from the storerooms of Groot Constantia. And then it goes on from there. But it's sort of a bittersweet story. And it's linked as well to the earthquake in Ceres-Tilbach area in 1969 when they were young ladies. They are both from Cirrus. So there's a link there. Again, I somehow can't let go of things that have happened in the country or bits of the past that might be known or not known. You know, so yeah, that's the new one.
It sounds absolutely fascinating. I'm sure people can't wait for that one to be published. But it is like what you've done with the fourth boy. You have brought to light a part of our history that I think very, very few people know. And I'm sure you've had tremendous response to it. And people, I'm sure, asking you, was that true?
Yeah, absolutely. I've had the most unbelievable response. You know, when you work in television, you don't really get feedback. You get ratings, and you might get a nice letter from the channel to thank your bosses to say, well done to you and your team. But when you write a novel, it's yourself out there, and it's your own sort of creation. And the feedback has just astounded me. It really has. I've had a friend of mine here in town in Karlsdorp, Jewish lady, who was really moved by the story and said it told so much similarity between her own family's experience and the story. And it's just so heartwarming to hear things like that, you know. But yeah, the feedback has been totally, it bowled me over, really. And yeah, I hope it continues for whoever hasn't yet read it.
Well, thank you very much for joining me. As I said, the book has got rave reviews. It is The Fourth Boy by Andrew Robert Wilson. And it was Andrew joining me to tell me a little bit more about it. So thank you so much, Andrew.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Thanks to all of you for joining me. Thanks to Craig for putting everything together, as well as Vusi helped today. If you want to know anything about the Jewish Board, please go and check out our social media pages. Otherwise, until next week, I wish you all Shabbat Shalom.